Welcome to Free Fire Radio. And now, Free Fire Radio is about to commence.
Good morning, and KCNR News Time. Actually, it's KCNR Free Fire Time, 7:05, 54 beautiful degrees in Reading. I'm Bob Belongi. Carl and Linda Bott are, of course, in Washington, D.C., and they will be returning on Wednesday. But taking the helm this morning, we have, good morning, Mark Beecham.
Thank you, Bob, very much for that. I'm, as Bob said, I'm subbing for Carl and Linda today and tomorrow. And on Wednesday, former supervisor Trish Clark and Reverge Anselmo, a very interesting guy who built and owns Anselmo Vineyards, will be hosting the show. Today in the first hour, my guest is Ken White, Director of Community Relations for the Good News Rescue Mission. And we'll find out how the local economy is affecting the mission's work to help the homeless and less fortunate among us. At 8 o'clock, I'm going to have Jeff Avery and Greg Balkovic of the Greater Reading Chamber of Commerce on the show, and I'm going to ask them, among other things, why the Chamber has endorsed Reading City Council incumbents Patrick Jones and Rick Bassetti. But first, Carl gets a chance to rant in the show about this point, and I can't rant as well as he does, but anyway, here goes. A couple of weeks ago, he and Linda had Ken Murray on the show, and Ken later took a lot of heat for misrepresenting his role in Stillwater Business Park. Now, don't get me wrong. Ken's an interesting guy. He's a smart guy and a guy who does his homework. He's a well-spoken guy. But, like a lot of politicians, he has sort of a slippery relationship with the truth. I wouldn't say he lied about Stillwater, but I wouldn't say he told the truth either. But beyond that, something he said on the show, we need to get the acrimony off the front page, which was a clear reference to the fact that the council can't get along with one another. And I certainly don't disagree with that. I think you can disagree on issues without being disagreeable. I'm just not sure that electing Ken Murray, despite his many other positive attributes, will accomplish that. And here's something I wrote for the paper a couple of days after Ken's radio appearance. It reads, Do we need Rodney King to deliver the invocation at the Reading City Council meetings? We may, depending on the outcome of the November election. Remember King's "Why Can't We All Just Get Along" appeal? For argument's sake, let's assume Patrick Jones, Ken Murray, and Francie Sullivan win in the November elections, which is not a far-fetched scenario at all. Okay, consider this. Jones hates Murray, his former political mentor and now his chief critic. You Tea Party folks would remember their performance the other Monday night. Missy MacArthur, who has 2 years left on her term, can't stand Murray or Dick Dickerson, who also has two years left on his term. And Dickerson and Murray can't stand Missy MacArthur. Francie Sullivan and Dickerson reportedly have issues dating back to when they served on the Board of Supervisors together. So if this scenario plays out, that city council dais could be a case study in passive-aggressive body language. On the radio recently, as I said earlier, Ken Murray repeatedly said the council needs to, quote, get the acrimony off the front page of the newspaper. And my conclusion was that may be one tall order. So anyway, we'll be back after this quick message from our sponsors with Ken White of the Good News Rescue Mission.
The home of Free Fire Radio. Weather for our area is going to be a beautiful day. High near 88. Northwest winds between 6 to 9 miles an hour. Mostly clear tonight with a low around 63. Warming up tomorrow, high near 96. Now back to Mark Beecham on KCNR 1460.
Thanks, Bob. You know, every so often I have lunch with Ken White of the Good News Rescue Mission. The last time, a couple of weeks ago, something he said really struck me, that unless this economy turns around in the next year or 18 months, which is something I think most people would agree is pretty unlikely, we could see as he put it, a wave of familial homelessness that he fears could overwhelm the resources of the mission and similar nonprofit agencies as well as the agencies of our county and local government. It's a pretty scary thought, and I wrote about it in the paper, my Saturday column, and then I thought I would, when this opportunity to host the show came up, I thought I would give Ken a call. He was the first person I called, actually, to have on to talk about it. So, Ken, welcome to the show, and thanks for being here this early.
Thanks for the invitation.
And talk a little bit about this. First of all, talk about the primary mission of the mission and your primary clientele, and then we can get into this issue of this wave of familial homelessness that you are worried about seeing.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the mission a little bit. To answer your first question, what's the primary mission of the mission? As you know, we're a faith-based organization, a Christian organization, and so our primary mission, obviously, is one that is a Christian mission. We want to reach out to people with the gospel. But there are so many different ways to do that, and our focus is to reach out to them with the gospel, not only with words, but also with help with the basic needs in life, which, you know, food, clothing, and shelter, and then other assistance to get back on their feet and back out into society to lead productive lives, which is what we feel like God has called everybody to do if they have the ability to do that. So that's our primary mission. And then, the community has really gotten behind that within the last 10 to 15 years. And the mission, about 1995, I think it was, I moved back to Reading. I had grown up here and then gone away for 5 years, finished up my degree, worked a little bit in politics. And when I came back, one of the first people I met with was Jesse Miller, who was then the chief executive at the mission. And Jesse informed me that the mission was on its way down and it looked like they were going to close. They were having trouble making their ends meet, and it looked like they were just not going to be around much longer. And they'd been around since, as you know, about 1964. And so I left just kind of disheartened, and he hadn't shared anything that I could do to really help the mission. And but then within about a year, this guy started showing up on TV and on the radio and in the newspaper named Bill Roscoe. And Bill had spent time both at the Denver mission and at the Santa Rosa mission. And Bill had a vision for what the face of rescue as a whole should be. And he didn't see it as the traditional three hots and a cot, just pulling people in off the street, giving them shelter and letting them stick around for a while. He saw it as an opportunity to really reach into people's lives and turn those lives around. And so he did the meals and he did the shelter and he did free clothing and he did dental clinics and medical clinics and academic centers and recovery programs. And pretty soon the mission was just, rip-roaring again. And thank goodness it was, because there's been so many lives touched by it since. So that's, just to give you kind of a brief history of where we've been in the last decade and a half. That's been my, kind of experience with the mission for the last 10, 15 years.
Are most of your clients suffering from drug and alcohol issues or what?
I would say, yeah, a large majority of them. Unfortunately, and it's kind of the chicken or the egg argument. Do the drugs and alcohol lead to homelessness, or does homelessness lead to the drug and alcohol problems? And sometimes it's hard to tell which came first. But in almost all cases, and not all cases, but in almost all cases that we see where addiction is present, usually it's some other tragedy or something that's, precipitated that. And sometimes those tragedies are being born into it. Okay. We had a gentleman come to the mission about 2 years ago who had started drugs and alcohol at age 11, not because he wanted to, but because his parents thought it was cool to get him high and watch him wig out, and they used it as a form of entertainment with their friends. And so, when I read stories like that, it kind of puts things in perspective. We're not all born into homes like that, and we're not always given those sort of, I don't know what you want to call it, disadvantages. And so it really kind of helps put things in perspective for me, because, I used to walk around saying, well, everybody's got a choice, and not everybody does. At age 11, you don't necessarily have a choice to tell your parents no when they give you something you don't know what it is, et cetera. And he was in that addiction for about 30 years, and so we're trying to break 30 years worth of behavior and substance abuse control in his life.
Are most of your clients male?
Yes, we're still seeing a majority, but we have a lot of female clients. Our last snapshot survey showed about a 60-40 split, 60% male, about 40% female.
And that, I assume that 40% is up considerably from what it may have been 10 years ago, 20 years ago?
The numbers, I've been showing people this disproportionate graph of income versus need, and the need's been going up, as has income, surprisingly, but needs much higher and much faster than income over the last decade or so.
What percentage of your clientele comes from the local area, and what percentage comes from, say, out of the area, people who have been maybe paroled from prison or something like that?
It's hard to say how many, because we don't necessarily track their origin, I guess you could say, in terms of, because they're homeless, they don't necessarily have the last known address. We do see quite a few people from out of the area, but the vast majority of the people that we serve are from the community. Now, we've seen, that those numbers will go up and down depending on economic trends, sometimes by quarter, by month. At one of our last staff meetings, one of the directors mentioned that he's been seeing a lot of folks from outside the area apply. But even then, we're seeing a lot more people coming in off the street into our program as opposed to, say, coming in as a result of, say, sentencing alternatives or things like that. And so people coming in for addiction services, a lot more of them coming in off the street.
Okay. We got to take a quick break, but we'll be back with Ken White of the Good News Rescue Mission.
KCNR time is 7:19, and we've got a heads up. Power is going to be turned off to our building, so our studios will be down starting at 7 p.m. tonight for what we hope will be just a few hours. So we will be silent for a couple of hours this evening while some much-needed repairs are carried out by the City of Reading Electric Utility, and we hope that you will bear with us, and we hope to be back on the air within a few hours again. That begins this evening at 7 p.m. 605-4567, the call-in comment line if you want to join in the conversation. This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media. The home of Free Fire, KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. The weather brought to you by Anselmo Vineyard. 20% chance of showers, mostly cloudy, high near 79. Enjoy good sleeping weather tonight with a low around 58. And then tomorrow, high near 88 by midweek, will be up near 96. Now back to Mark Beecham on KCNR 1460.
Thanks, Bob, and we're talking with Ken White, Community Relations Director of the Good News Rescue Mission this morning. Ken, since the economy took a header, I guess 2007, 2008 here, we're always kind of a leading indicator of economic decline in Reading, if we ever. What has been the response of the mission? What's been the effect of the economy on the mission and the demand for your services?
Well, that's about the same time I started at the mission. It was March of 2008, so the economy had just started to turn south. Maybe we'd been in deep recession for about 6 months, and the immediate effect was financial. Our giving had tumbled off the first part of the year, and that's when I came on. That was about the same time Jim Dahl had left as our director. And every time you have a leadership change, that can be somewhat detrimental. So we had all these, and then we just opened a new building on top of that. And so we had quite a few other factors besides the economy taking their toll. We had increased overhead with a new building, which meant, expanding services and things like that. And then we had Jim's departure, and then the economy all hit all around the same time. So the immediate effect was this, falling off of income and then an immediate rise in services. And we had a huge jump year over year in the amount of people needing help, and then also the drop off in income. So we had this diverging graph line of things going different directions, and so it made it very difficult for us to meet needs right at that point in time. And then since that time, the income has stabilized to some degree, but the need for services has escalated. And even that has stabilized to some degree, but we're seeing a different clientele these days, and the overhead expenses and everything, we just haven't caught up to all of that yet.
Can you talk about that different clientele? Is it related to the economy as opposed to drug and alcohol abuse, the traditional drivers?
I think in a lot of ways it is. We're seeing in the last year what we've seen is a much greater need for services that aren't necessarily related to shelter, you know, groceries, clothing, things like that. People seem to still be living somewhere, whether they're in a tent camp somewhere, like we've seen in the news recently, or whether they're in a low-income hotel or cohabitating with family or friends or couch surfing or whatever the case might be. They still seem to be someplace other than the mission. And I don't mean everybody. We're full every night. But we haven't seen that dramatic increase in the need for shelter, but it's been in other areas at the mission. The other thing we've noted, and this is just an anecdote, we've been trying to catalog our guests' photos so we know who we're dealing with at any given time and try and move them forward. And somebody brought me a stack of photos here the other day, and as I was thumbing through them, and it was shocking how many of the folks that I was looking at were under 40 years of age, under 30 years of age in many cases, maybe even under 20 years of age. But everybody seemed to be an Xer or younger in the photos that I was looking at. The vast majority, I mean, I'd say 90-plus percent of them were young people, relatively speaking. So that's been the face we've been seeing lately, is a lot more young people.
And contrast that with the people you might have seen, say, 10 years ago.
Well, not to try and stereotype, but the traditional street drunk or street bum that most people think of was the grizzled old Caucasian man with a long beard. And you'll still see some folks like that are out on the street, just can't make it work for whatever reason, mental illness or otherwise. But now we're seeing, I think, a lot more people who are functional that just are not making it. And that's what we're seeing now.
Yeah, during the break, we had a little sidebar conversation. The question was, what percentage of your clientele is rehabilitatable, if that's the right word, or what percentage is sort of lost to drugs and alcohol and other mental illness? And what's your thought on that?
Well, I think the vast majority of the people we see, I think if given the right opportunities, could make it. A lot of times those opportunities don't exist here in town, the job market being what it is and so forth. And then you throw substance abuse in the mix, and that's always a bad alternative to the depression or whatever they feel from not being able to get a job or provide for their family. But it's what we're seeing is the, I think most of the people that come through are probably rehabilitatable if the right opportunities are there. But there are definitely a segment of the population that we just can't help.
We got to take a break here, and we'll be back after the news. Thanks.
KCNR time is coming up on 7:30. Fox News is next. It's 51 degrees. 35. Here on the home of Free Fire Media, our call and comment line, 605-4567. The chat room is up at KCNR1460.com, or you can send an email to Bob at KCNR1460.com. There's no excuse not to join in the conversation. Now, back to Mark Beecham on KCNR 1460.
Thanks, Bob. I'm talking to Ken White, who's Community Relations Director of the Good News Rescue Mission, about the economy and how the economy has driven up demand for his organization's services. And Ken and I had a coffee the other week, and he talked about something he is fearful of. Perhaps it's inevitable, but anyway, a wave of, as he put it, familial homelessness. Ken, could you talk about what you fear, and where are these people now, and what could drive them to your doorstep?
Well, as I mentioned over lunch, the economy being what it is, having been in the investment field, and we share some background there, the economists that I've watched tend to think that the economy is not going to get better in the next year and a half. It's going to get worse, and that we're in a longer-term recession that's going to last years, maybe even a decade. And if that's the case, and a lot of that is based on, population trends and Gen X or population being not as big as the boomers and so therefore can't produce what the boomers did. So if the economy does, continue to languish, it's my contention, again, based on what we've seen with, say, the local Department of Health Services, having seen a massive increase among two-parent families seeking assistance with health care and other benefits, you know, that group of people, as I mentioned before, somehow are making it work. They're staying in their homes or they're staying in other people's homes. Maybe they're not paying the rent or maybe they're not paying the mortgage, but they've still got a roof over their head. Maybe they're couch surfing, maybe they're staying with relatives. Whatever the case might be, they've still got some sort of shelter. That group of people, as the economy continues to languish, are going to continue to find themselves in worsening economic conditions personally. And my biggest concern is that as a community, we're not prepared for that next wave of homelessness, which is the family, the mom and the dad and their kids that don't or won't have any place to go when all the safety nets, you know, have been used up. And that's something that I still think is hopefully out in the future just a little bit. And if we start preparing now, we might be able to meet at least some level of need. And it's my hope that by kind of raising the alarm a little bit, we're able to do that. But again, that's going to be more than what the mission can do on our own, and it's going to be something that other organizations are going to have to step into the fray, including maybe the local government and so forth.
Because you have actually very limited facilities available for women and families, right?
Well, unfortunately, for an intact family, we have no facilities.
Okay.
Mom and dad have to, if they come to the mission, mom and dad have to sleep in separate quarters. Mom usually takes the children if they're younger. If they're a little older and male, the dad can take them. But that's an uncomfortable situation. I've had families come to us where they didn't feel comfortable sleeping, you know, separately from their kids and things like that. And so it's been difficult and will continue to be for us meeting that need. And it's my hope that, you know, again, by kind of raising the alarm, folks will step up who have a heart toward those types of issues and help us prepare for them and create the income stream and the capital to maybe even acquire new facilities to meet that need as we go forward.
Now, what's your current budget and what would you need to have as a budget in order to meet the kind of demand that you fear the economy may be foisting upon you?
The current budget is to meet the current need is about 35% of where we need to be. We've been as I've mentioned, plugging holes. I feel like the little boy putting his finger in the dam. You know, we're plugging all these holes, but they're, it's like the old cartoon. There's more holes than we have fingers at this point. So the current budget is already inadequate to continue sustaining what we already have. But again, we've had very generous volunteers and very creative people on staff who've been able to help us overcome a lot of that. And then some of that's just flat out the miraculous hand of God. But we need, if you were to look at our organization and compare us to other organizations, we need a budget typically of about $4 to $5 million annually to do what we do, and we operate now on about $1.5 million.
We've got a long ways to go.
And
we have got to take a break right here for a minute or two, and we'll be back with Ken White of the Good News Rescue Mission.
740 and 51 degrees on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
MD Imaging Radio.
This portion of Free Fire Radio brought to you by B&T Satellite off Airport Road, just down from Burrito Bandito. Go down and introduce yourself to Doug Tooley. He's the owner. He is a veteran. Spent time in the 82nd Airborne, as they say, jumping out of perfectly good airplanes. But he brought back that dedication to service for his local customers. He's been doing it since 1985, installing satellite systems. He is your Dish Network provider. Dish Network, how do you want your HDTV? And if you bring in an old remote, maybe the dog got hold of it or it just turned up tossed in the sink or whatever, they will furnish you a brand new Dish Network remote. 244-1988, or you can reach them on the web at ReadingHDTV.com. Now back to Mark Beecham and more of Free Fire Radio here on KCNR 1460.
Thanks, Bob, and we're here this morning talking to Ken White, the Community Relations Director of the Good News Rescue Mission, about how the economy has increased demand for his organization's services and his fears about what could happen over the next 18 months to 2 years or so. Ken, the kind of wave of familial homelessness that you fear, are we sort of living in a fool's paradise here, sort of head in the sand, ignoring it right now? I mean, I know you see it coming. I know there must be people at the county that work in that area who live with it every day. But do you get a sense that the public and the media are aware of what we could be facing very soon?
You know, I have to say probably not, and I don't think it's a head in the sand or a head in the clouds, either one. I think it's people with their head down working hard right now. That's the story I hear most often when I ask people how things are going. Oh, I'm busy, you know. And the people that are working have picked up the slack for whatever employees aren't there now. And I can't tell you how many people I talk to who are working, in essence, two and three jobs because they've picked up former coworkers' duties. And so you've got people working 15 and 18 and 20-hour days at times to put food on the table for their families and to keep their businesses running. And, you know, as you know, our area is primarily the self-employed. And so I think it's just a lot of issues. I mean, you could take any local political or social issue. A lot of them aren't dealt with, I guess you could say, because people are just flat out working hard. And that's what I see most often. I don't think it's ignorance. I don't think it's lack of compassion or anything like that. Because I have to say, I've lived in other communities, but this is by far one of the most generous communities around. I mean, the people here, when they hear there's need, they come out. And they really give. It's just getting the message out and making sure you're in front of those people, and then finding time to get in front of them when they're not, you know, working 20-hour days.
You know, one other issue sort of related to this, and I hear this a lot, talking to people on the periphery of Parkview, even talking to some law enforcement types. They sort of blame the mission in an odd way for some crime, transientness, the homeless problem. Per se, how do you respond to that?
There's a couple of things. First of all, you know, the mission was started in 1964. There was a mission that preceded the mission that had begun in Redding, and we didn't start to, you know, create a homeless problem. There already was one. Our goal was to be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. And we still have a good neighbor policy where if somebody lets us know that there's issues involving what they believe to be our guests, if they, especially if it's a law enforcement issue, I've asked people. I say, get us the police report, get us an incident number, so that we can work with law enforcement on finding out who these people are. We'll deny services to folks if they're not on good behavior, and we'll take it as a disciplinary issue and say, hey, look, you can't be, you know, disrespecting other people's property. You've got to help us help them as well, and so we'll take those issues on. As a means of trying to also be a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. But again, like I said, the issue of homelessness pre-existed the mission, and it will continue to exist. And I kind of have to chuckle sometimes. It's like, you know, well, if we didn't exist, these people would automatically go out and buy a house and not be there. And, it, you know, it's not reality. So, but you know, at the same time, I understand their frustration. You know, and have experienced it myself. I got hit up for money last night in the Walmart parking lot, you know, 10, 11 o'clock at night. And, you know, somebody comes up to my window and, hey, just need a couple of bucks for gas. And I said, well, meet me at the gas station and I'll buy you gas. Oh, no, I just need some money. And I always encourage people, don't give out money. And particularly there was a carjacking with a friend of mine the other day. I almost got carjacked. And, you know, just don't take any chances like that. Just, you know, you can offer them service or whatever, but make sure you're in a nice, well-lit place with a lot of people around.
Back to the mission. How many people do you feed? How many people are you feeding these days? And how many people are you sheltering these days?
On a sheltering basis, you know, I've got last year's statistics to deal with. And last year we averaged about 208 people per night. That goes a little bit lower than that in the summer and a lot higher than that in the winter. You know, we've had nights where we've had over 400 people at the mission. On average, as far as meals go, we average about, if you include groceries that we give away and do a ratio per bag and that sort of thing, if you include those, we're at about 650 meals a day. On site, we probably serve about 600 meals a day.
And last Thanksgiving or Christmas, I can't remember which it was now, we came down to volunteer for the big meal, and that was an amazing exercise in organization. I've never seen anything quite like it. You guys really have that dialed in.
Yeah.
How many meals did you serve that night?
On each one of those, we estimated about 1,000 for both our holiday special events, 1,000 each. So yeah, in one day, and then we give away at each of those events, about 500 turkeys and extra groceries and stuff to go with it.
Yeah, that's a great event. Yeah. We've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Ken White of the Good News Rescue Mission.
7:50 and 52 degrees here on KCNR 1460. The phone line's open, 605-4567. Chat room is up at KCNR1460.com or send email to Bob at KCNR1460.com.
Wear the shirts.
Live United. Go to Live Vacate. Volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
North State weather brought to you always by Anselmo Vineyards. A high today near 88 under sunny skies. And then maybe a, make that a correction, a high near 79, 20% chance of showers. Then tomorrow the high will be near 88. And by Wednesday it'll be nudging up close to the century mark. Currently here at KCNR it is 52 degrees. Now back to Mark Beecham.
Thank you, Bob. We're here talking to Ken White, who's Director of Community Relations for the Good News Rescue Mission. And we're talking about the effect of the economy on demand for his organization's services. And I wanted to talk, sort of circle back and talk about something that you guys have gotten some heat for, some criticism in the past for. Maybe it's a misperception, but I want to deal with it. And that is that you sort of, you'll feed people, you'll shelter them, but you sort of give them the full court press on, you know, accepting Jesus Christ as their Savior and that sort of thing. Is that true or not?
Well, you know, there's always a grain of truth in every misconception, right? The truth is we hold chapel every night. The truth is that...
You can sleep through it if you want,
you
right?
can sleep through it, and the truth is we ask and require that people who want to eat dinner with us come to chapel. You don't have to be in chapel to come for lunch or breakfast. So you can get at least two meals a day without having to sit through a message. Although that may change. I don't know. We may want to do that at some point. But again, going back to our primary mission, you know, we're a Christian organization. We believe that there's a God, and we believe that, you know, people need to know who he is. And if they don't, you know, we think that everything we're doing here is futile. If we're just feeding their stomachs, they're going to live and die and end up in the dust, and who cares? But we believe that there's more to life than that, and we want people to hear that, and we want people to know that, and to know that there's hope for eternity. And if we didn't do that, we'd be doing not only them a disservice, but we'd be dishonoring God in the process. And so it's funny, your bumper music coming in was the group Yes. You know, and all things, we believe that all things with Christ are yes, yes. So when, it, you know, everything we try to do, it's the Good News Rescue Mission. We're not here to you know, pound people over the head with a Bible. We're here to tell them that there's good news and that there's hope out there. And that's really what we're about. And we know there's people that don't believe that, and that's okay. For them, if they don't want to believe it, that's something they're going to have to take up with God in eternity. And again, we're not here to preach a hellfire and brimstone gospel. We're here to preach a good news gospel that is Jesus loves them, he died for them, and we want to see people come to an understanding of that. And we do that once a day.
Back to the funding of the mission and what people, listeners of this show, members of the community can do to help out. The mission specifically, but maybe in a more general sense, this whole issue of homelessness, which I think is going to grow rather than stabilize. What can people do to help the mission? I mean, they can write a check for as little as $5 a month or less, right?
Right. Just telling somebody off the air here that we have folks that are giving us like 25 cents a month, literally. We'll get their 25 cents a month check. And it probably costs us more to get their 25 cents a month than it's worth. But you know what? God bless them. Keep giving us the 25 cents. We'll take whatever people feel led to give.
And money, you'll take clothes?
Yeah, we'll take clothes, food. Money, food, small appliances, furniture, whatever is usable and still in good working order, we'll take.
Where should people bring it?
2830 South Market Street. It's right next door to our administration office there on South Market, next to the Tomra Recycling Center. And you can give online at our website at gnrm.org. It's the acronym for Good News Rescue Mission. And then you can also, if you wanted to set up something more routine and consistent, you can call our offices and we can get you set up on a monthly, you know, debit, you know, withdrawal from your checking or a credit card monthly withdrawal or whatever you want to do.
Right. What can people do to volunteer? What sort of needs do you have for volunteers?
Everything. We need everything. We need volunteers to, you know, to help us out at the holidays, obviously, to help out with our fundraising events and our special events. We need volunteers to do custodial work, to serve in the kitchen. We need volunteers to help us with administrative work, clerical work. We need teachers in our academic center. That whole department is 100% volunteer, including the director, staff-level director is a volunteer.
What kind of areas of expertise would you need teaching-wise?
In that particular department, really there is no level of expertise she's looking for. She needs somebody, you know, people that can read, write, and are articulate to some degree. But we would love to have people that are retired teachers or folks that have some education background. So any field or occupation, if you don't feel like you're qualified to come down and help, you are. There are certain areas where we ask you to have the same religious or philosophical belief that we have and support that. But in most cases, you know, like I said, serving around the kitchen, things like that, just come help.
Okay, great. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, learning more about the mission. And I think, you know, we live in a retirement community. There are an awful lot of people with time on their hands, and some of them are depressed with the amount of time on their hands. And they are looking for something meaningful to do, and helping at the mission or helping in a similar capacity elsewhere in the community would really be a good thing for them and for the community. So thanks again for coming, and good luck to you.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
You're listening to KCNR Shasta, Reading Free Fire Radio with Mark Beecham after the news. Good morning. It is 8:05 on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. 605-4567, the call-in comment line. The chat room is up at KCNR1460.com, and you can email Bob at KCNR1460.com. Now, Free Fire Radio continues with guest host Mark Beecham.
Thank you, Bob. And for the second hour here, I'm very pleased to have in the studio Greg Balkovic and Jeff Avery of the Greater Reading Chamber of Commerce. Greg is the current chairman, and Jeff is the immediate past chair, right? And I wanted to have them on to talk about the city council race, which is going to consume a lot of our attention over the next few months once it heats up. It's already beginning to. And talk a little bit about the chamber's role in that race and role in local politics. I'd like to start off by asking Greg first. The chamber has endorsed early on this year incumbents Patrick Jones and Rick Bassetti. Why did the chamber endorse those two candidates?
We felt that they had done what they said they were going to do. They were going to take a good hard look at the budget. During the last election, I don't think we endorsed either of the candidates, although we interviewed everybody like we usually do. But we tried to focus in that election the discussion on the city budget, and I think that helped the candidates. This time we felt that Rick and Patrick had done what they said they were going to do. They were going to take a look at the budget, at the union contracts that were in place, and issues that the chamber felt should have been on the table a long time ago. And so that's why we decided early on to endorse them.
Jeff, there are three seats that are open. You've endorsed two candidates. What's the process for the chamber trying to decide whether or not to endorse a third candidate?
Well, next month what we'll be doing is the Political Action Committee and the Board of Directors will be meeting with the remaining candidates and making a decision after interviewing those eight whether or not we're going to endorse a third candidate at that point.
Okay. Greg, what are you looking for in a candidate to endorse? What kind of criteria do you have?
Well, I think we're looking for somebody that understands the ramifications of the current economic climate. Has a good handle on the city budget and the issues. currently there's a big portion of the budget that goes into benefits and retirement. Those are issues that have to be addressed. We can't wait 10 or 15 years for those things to heal themselves. We have to address it in the next couple of years. And so we're looking for candidates that understand those issues.
Do you have a sense, looking at the field now, of anybody who would be on your side besides the two incumbents you've endorsed?
No, we haven't interviewed any of the candidates yet, and we won't be doing that until probably the middle of September. And at this point, I don't have a clue, to be quite frankly honest.
Okay. The chamber has endorsed candidates in the past, and then subsequently, based on their record in office, not endorsed them. I can think of Ken Murray for one, Mary Stegall for another, Dick Dickerson for another, and John Mathena rounding out the field maybe. Can you talk a little bit about how those candidates sort of fell out of favor or got on the wrong side of the issues that you were promoting?
Well, we're concerned about business and how decisions impact business. We're also concerned about the community at large. And, again, it gets back to those fiscal issues that we saw developing over the years. And we didn't think that a second round of support for those particular folks didn't live up to our expectations. And so we decided that there would be no support for them during the subsequent election.
Jeff?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, this is tough. You know, and the households and our businesses are having to watch where their money's going and being more focused. And it is tough. You know, right now the public safety unions obviously are going through and making some counter proposals and whatnot. And you know, it's not an easy job for the city council members. It's an underappreciated job. Unlike the city of Bell, these folks aren't getting paid $100,000 a year. I think their stipend is $600 a month, and it's basically a volunteer job when you look at it that way. But what it boils down to, and we've talked about this in the past, as businesses, we want strong public safety. I mean, when we're trying to recruit businesses up here, showing what a great place Reading is, we want to be a safe community. And I kind of liken it to, you know, having four or five kids, and you send the first one off to college, and then you know, maybe you're cut down to 30 hours a week, and all of a sudden you've got to kind of recall your first child back and say, sorry, you can't go to, you know, University of California, you know, in L.A. You're going to have to go to Shasta College for a couple of years because I got four more kids to put through. And that's what I think right now as the city council members looking saying, hey, we do appreciate the job public safety is doing, but we can't continue down this fiscal path and the costs we have. Otherwise, when we go to hire more public safety or have an adequate number, we're not going to have enough money to do it correctly.
Right. Okay, we've got to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with these two gentlemen from the Greater Reading Chamber of Commerce talking about local politics.
It's 8:11 on Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460.
Imagine
2010.
KCNR News Time is
2010.
KCNR News Time is actually KCNR Free Fire Radio Time, 8:14. This portion of the show brought to you by Tobacco and Brew on Hilltop Drive. Chat line is open, KCNR1460.com. Phone line, if you want to call in, 605-4567 is our call-in and comment line. And, of course, you can send an email, bob@KCNR1460.com. And now, back to Mark Beecham, filling in on Free Fire Radio here on KCNR 1460.
Thanks, Bob. We're back with Greg Balkovic and Jeff Avery of the Greater Reading Chamber of Commerce talking local politics. And this election is going to be a hard-fought, bitter, divisive one. It could be our own little version of a civil war, given what I see unfolding here. But, Greg, going back to the Chamber's endorsement of Bassetti and Jones, and you may be a third candidate you might endorse based on some interviews you're going to do next month, what are the key, say, the top three issues that you are concerned about as a Chamber?
Well, I think we need to be concerned about the economy to start with, just in general. We've seen our membership dip a bit over the last year or so, which has an impact on us and our ability to do the things that we do for our members. But I think the top issue in this election is the city budget and staffing, police and fire. Public safety is huge. I think everybody's very much concerned about it. We've seen a reduction in staff. This is not the first time that's happened. It has happened in the past, but nothing to this degree. And so we're concerned that in all levels of city government that a hard look be taken at budgets, at staffing levels, at salaries and benefits. The elephant in the room is the PERS retirement system. And I know there's some discussion among we've had discussions with public safety folks, and they think it's a state issue. But as you and I both know, it's an issue that left where it is without any pressure from the local communities, it will continue to languish. And so we feel that's probably the biggest issue that we have is making sure the budget is in line, that staffing is adequate, but we have to take a look at the salaries and benefits. It's just too much.
You mentioned an article that appeared in Sunday's Record Searchlight by Scott Mobley, which took a look at the city's budget, and there were some good charts, at least the ones online. There may have been others in the paper as well, which sort of broke it down in a very helpful graphic way where the money goes. But you were saying during the break you'd want it to be further broken down, and so people can see what average.
Yeah, I'd like to see a breakdown by each staffing position or several staffing positions, a good sampling of the city that would show salary plus benefits, which would include retirement and separately the health care. You know, those are. I think if people saw that, they'd be startled by the benefits that are paid. Now, it's not that those people don't work hard, and I don't even want to give that that kind of a negative connotation to it, but we live in a small town, relatively speaking, and those salaries and benefits just do not reflect our local area.
Right. We live in a fairly poor area, actually, when you get down to it. Jeff, you were mentioning about a hypothetical mail clerk, M-A-I-L clerk at the city. Could you just talk about that?
Yeah, the entry starting positions of the city, just the entry level clerk positions, start somewhere between $30,000 and $32,000 a year, and that's before the all the benefits, and that's a little over $1,300 a month that they get in health care benefits, and then you're talking about the retirement package, everything else. All of a sudden, you're looking at a job that's It's an entry-level position of $45,000 to $50,000. There's not an employer, let me rephrase that, a private employer in the county or in this whole area that can afford to do that. So that's really on the back of the taxpayers. And you know, when we look at that, yet we also want to look at what kind of positions that are currently hired by the city could possibly be privatized and done at a much better rate, because the savings there could go back to helping, you know, keep those public safety officers, both fire and police, on the streets.
Now, this whole issue of privatization, I know, was teed up by Shasta Voices, perhaps with some input from the chamber, I guess, 8 months ago, 9 months ago, maybe a year ago, was on the table. What became of that? I mean, it seems like the council looked at it. There was a privatization committee appointed to look at it, which is like, let's appoint a committee and then ignore what they recommend if they recommend anything we don't want. What became of that study? What became of that whole notion of privatization?
Well, as I understand, what took place was each council person selected a person or two to serve on the committee, and then sat on the committee themselves, and it met six or eight times, I guess, and nothing ever really came out of it. I'm not sure how focused or committed they were upon really looking at those types of things, and as a result, I think it just languished and died. That's my personal opinion.
All right, we got to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with Greg Balkovic, Jeff Avery of the Greater Reading Chamber of Commerce, talking local politics.
Regional Medical Center. Total commitment. Total care.
It's 823 on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media, 53 degrees. Look for a high today near 79 with a 20% chance of showers. It'll be partly cloudy tonight and a low around 58, warming up as we head into the week. Tomorrow will be 88, and by midweek we'll be touching the century mark. Weather always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. And now back to Mark Beecham on KCNR 1460.
Thanks, Bob. And we're back with Greg Balkovic and Jeff Avery of the Greater Reading Chamber of Commerce. And I understand that Carl Bott is on the line from Washington, D.C. Carl, can you hear us?
We have, I guess not. We should be patched in.
Carl, are you there?
All right, we may have dropped the call. We'll check on that. Go ahead.
Okay. Back to our guests in the studio here. I wanted to ask Greg about the city of Reading's budget has long been touted as being very, very conservative compared to others around the state, with a much vaunted 10-year planning horizon. And I wanted to get your and Greg's, I'm sorry, and Jeff's perspective on that, whether it really was conservative or whether perhaps they were projecting, future trends, past trends indefinitely into the future.
Well, I think on the average that we're looking at a 4-4.5% increase in sales tax income in general over the next 10 years when they originally put the plan together, and that may have been fine the first couple of years, but as the chamber saw a number of years ago, we thought there were issues, not only because of the huge and growing commitment at the time that was largely unfunded for retirement, and that had never been a part of the accountability. And I think in the last year or two or three, that has been required that also be posted, which shows that that made a big impact, major impact on the budget and planning. Unless those things are very apparent and say on a side table, not looked at on a regular basis, they tend to be overlooked. And I think the PERS system in general, when they put it together, looked at the best case scenario. I think the facts bear that out. Especially during the Gray Davis administration, they looked very hard at what the three scenarios were: best case, middle of the road, and worst case. And they selected the best case scenario. Right. And so that's part of the reason we are where we are today, totally out of our control. But locally, we should have had more oversight, I think, and concern about an unfunded liability or the potential for an unfunded liability.
On my blog at reading.com, not to promote myself here shamelessly, I will. I used to, whenever the city would come out with a economic forecast, as they were required to do, I think, every 6 months or so, for a number of years, say from 2008 and 2007, 2008, 2009, I'd blog about it, and on the blog I would have a pair of rose-colored glasses. And that's really, they were so off the mark on their projections, always way, way, way high, whether it was property tax or sales tax or TOT taxes. Anyway, we've got Carl Bott on the line, line one. Carl, you're calling from Washington, D.C. What's up?
There I am, and it's here at the hub of everything that's going on in the entire nation. And, of course, that probably explains why nothing's working really good.
So you're back there on a rather somber mission, I guess.
I am. We're here to pay honors to a family member, my cousin. The family's converged on this. He'll be buried at Arlington tomorrow morning. Since we've been here, though, we've managed to get to the Vietnam Wall, the Lincoln Memorial, World War II, and the Korean memorials. And we just finished up with the International Spy Museum. And Mark, I must say that I thought I saw your photo twice there. But your name is Dmitry Romanov.
Actually, I've been to that spy museum just after it opened in 2001, I think. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
It's been a somber trip, but at least our families get together. But we miss everybody out here. And here's Linda. She wants to say hello.
Hi. Hope everything's well. Thanks for sitting in for us.
Oh yeah, no problem at all. It's a lot of fun.
Well, we do appreciate it, Mark. You know, you're our first choice always. If we have to be someplace.
Did you happen to make it to the Glenn Beck extravaganza?
Well, you know what? We came in right after that, but I did talk to some of the security men that were there because we were at the Lincoln Memorial, and I said how big was it? And he says it filled up the whole mall, and on both sides of the mall. And he said there was a lot of people.
Yes.
And then he said, I asked, was there any problems? He goes, no. He said, no, no problems at all. And when you look at it, we saw it the next morning, and there was no trash, nothing like that. So it was interesting to see that many, you know, a couple hundred thousand people out there without any problems and no trash left.
Well, I saw a little bit of it on the internet yesterday. There was some pictures, and it looked like an enormous crowd. But of course, they don't give estimates as to how big crowds are anymore in Washington D.C., especially when they are conservative groups, I think.
Well, if you're standing on the steps at the top of the Lincoln Memorial and you look all the way down past the Reflecting Pond, past the World War II Memorial, then back up toward the Washington Monument. And it was filled all the way back there, and then on both sides.
Well, I was there for the Million Man March, and that sounds like a description of what I saw. And they claim to have had over a million people there for that. So, who knows how many people? But it was a good number.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've got to take a quick break, Carl.
Hey, thanks again. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I know you're right in the middle of your flow there. But hey, thank you so much, and we'll be back on the air on Thursday.
You bet. Thank you.
Fox News Radio, I'm Dave Anthony.
Way in the Ad Council.
KCNR time is now 8:34. It is 58 degrees, warming up. This portion of the show brought to you by BMT Satellite off Airport Road, just down from Burrito Bandito. Doug Tooley is the owner there. He's been installing the satellite dishes for a good long time and servicing local customers since 1985. Give him a call at 244-1988 on the web at readinghdtv.com. Now, back to Free Fire Radio with guest host Mark Beauchamp.
Thanks, Bob, and we're back in the studio with Greg Balkovic and Jeff Avery of the Greater Reading Chamber of Commerce. We're talking about the city council election in November, and it's going to be a real heated campaign, I'm sure. And one of the charges that I'm sure will be repeated over and over and over again by the public safety unions is that the chamber is somehow insensitive or doesn't care about safety, public safety, doesn't care about firemen, doesn't care about police, and that the implication will be that the chamber and the council majority of Jones and Bassetti and MacArthur somehow are just fine with the notion that we can have gangs running amok and unanswered 911 calls and houses burning down, etc. How do you respond to that charge?
Well, first of all, we totally disagree that we don't believe and support public safety. I mean, it's very important. In fact, right now we're teaming up with the auto dealers to have a shop local Reading and having a $500 a week prize with the final prize is $5,000. Is that correct, Greg?
That's correct.
You know, to promote shopping locally because that's where our tax dollars, come from. The majority, I think when I say unregulated tax dollars, are coming from sales tax, and that helps to support public safety. So we do believe in it. We want to have a very safe community. Greg and I are in the insurance industry. If anybody believes in fire protection, we're it. You know, I mean, we like our ISO rating right where it is. But on top of that, while city council does have a tough job, we were talking earlier, how difficult it can be to live within your means. And here city council isn't like, you can just say, hey, let's just somehow generate an extra couple million dollars out of the blue. You know, you and I can go out and, if we're lucky enough, maybe find a second job, mow lawns, collect aluminum cans, whatever, to increase our income. City can't really do that. You know, they might disagree with the approach the city council's taking and how they're discussing things with the union, and that can be tough. I mean, nobody likes to be told no. At the same time, it isn't just being told no. Maybe they don't like the approach, and that's something that can be addressed through better communication and having a little open mind on both sides.
I heard Ken Murray on the Tea Party debate with Patrick Jones and also on the radio here with Carl and Linda a few weeks ago, and Ken... to his credit, I mean, he does say that the current financing, the current salary and benefit packages for city employees are unsustainable. His view would be we just need to sit down and negotiate in good faith with the unions and come to some kind of compromise. And the unions, I think, response would be, well, we're willing to do that, but we want you and Francie Sullivan and... Sandra Speer on the council because you are reasonable and the current council majority is unreasonable. Do you think the current council majority is unreasonable?
I don't think at this particular point in time, no. I think somebody had to draw the line at some point. I know there were a number of meetings held, something like 90 meetings over 15, 18 months or something, trying to negotiate a new contract with, I think, police or fire. And I was at the meeting when Patrick Jones said, this is our best and final offer. And I also experienced some of the treatment that they and their families got after they left that meeting. I think it's when you're dealing with organizations, it's difficult to address all the issues because everything is scheduled. You talk about point after point after point. And I think it got to a point where they were just frustrated, just tired of the meetings. They wanted to sit down and get things done, and they felt that they just couldn't do anymore.
I understand that the meetings with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Union went on for 18 months. Is that right?
Yeah. Wow.
That's a lot of meetings.
Yeah, it was IBEW.
And I could see people losing patience on both sides, given that kind of log jam there. Next question. You guys have recently, the Chamber has recently approved a project with Shasta Voices, another business group in town, for Shasta Voices to do a salary survey of Reading, City of Reading. And can you talk a little bit about that and what you think that might reveal?
Well, really what we're after is just to find out how the city's salaries and benefit packages stack up with California cities, specifically northern and central California cities of similar size. And just to let you know, that study's actually financed by three business groups. It's Greater Reading Chamber of Commerce, Shasta Builders Exchange, and the Shasta County Board of Realtors, and we're all supporting that. And all we're after is just to get the facts out there so that all these candidates have the information to share, and that's all we're doing. We don't know what it's going to reveal. We just said, hey, here's the money. Come back and show us what we're doing, and you know, how does the city stack up with similar sized cities in California and Northern California, Central California, so that we know exactly where they stand, and that way the public can see this is really the truth.
It could actually make the union's points, perhaps.
It may.
That you know
that's a possibility.
They are relatively underpaid compared to City of Roseville or Davis or Chico or wherever, comparable city. Okay. We've got to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with Greg Balkovic and Jeff Avery of the Greater Reading Chamber of Commerce.
605-4567, the number to call here on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Radio. KCNR 1460, where it's 61 degrees. Weather today should be a 20% chance of showers. Mostly cloudy, high near 79. Tonight it'll get down around 58 degrees. Sunny tomorrow, high near 88. We'll be looking at the century mark by Thursday. Weather always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyard. Now, back to Mark Beecham, guest hosting on Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460.
Here If you take a walk, I'll tax your fee. Tax man.
Thank you, Bob, for that very appropriate bump music for this particular segment. We're talking to Greg Balkovic and Jeff Avery of the Greater Reading Chamber of Commerce about the city council race that is going to heat up here any day now. Patrick Jones has got signs and ads, and I see Gary Cadd and Rick Pacetti, and once the I think the radio and television ads start landing in earnest, it's going to be a really interesting campaign. And a very hard fought and bitter one, I suspect. Back to the public salary survey, public salary and benefit survey that the chamber is working on with Shasta Voices, along with the Builders Exchange and the group of realtors. What kind of exposure will that survey get once it's finished? And I assume it's going to be done sometime in late September, early October, in time for it to go out or to be publicized before the absentee ballots go out, Greg?
Well, I can't speak for the final decision, but I think it's our intent to make sure that it gets as many hands as possible because we want not only the candidates to understand the issues, we want the community at large to understand what's at stake. And as you said, this is going to be a very bitter election. In my lifetime, I've lived in Reading since 19... I've lived in Reading off and on since 1960, and I have never seen the polarization in the political arena as we have now. People are, you know, are taking sides, and what we really need to do is take a good hard look at what we can afford. And it's unfortunate, you know, police and fire are the biggest part of the budget. You cannot help but look at that part of the budget, as well as everything else.
You. A couple of years ago, I think 5 years ago now, 2005 or 2006, the chamber, along with the other groups that we mentioned, sponsored a survey, or not a survey, sponsored a guy named Freitas, who came to town, who looked at the city's budget and obligations, and it turned out to be remarkably prescient. Would either one of you gentlemen like to refresh our recollection on that? Stephen Freitas was his name.
Yeah, Dr. Stephen Freitas, and actually he's done studies like this up and down California, most recently helping out some of the cities under siege in Los Angeles County. And what he did, we just said, hey, we want to take a look at the budget and see where is the money going, what's happening, and is everything above board? And he came back and, you know, to the city's compliment, said, hey, everything is above board. Now, it could be made clear how some of these transfers, you know, in lieu ofs and this and that, where they're coming from, where they're going to. But he said the biggest thing is that a lot of the projections that they're using can lead to trouble because they are very rosy projections, and that's what they need to do. And he did compliment the city, saying compared to other cities, they are being very conservative. I mean, we've got to give that administration from, you know, from 2000 to 2010 and those city councils, whether we agree with all their decisions or not, they were being conservative for the projections they were being provided. The problem was the projections were way, way too positive.
What happened to that research that Dr. Freitas came up with? How was that received by the council, city staff, the media, the community at large?
I think the community at large, at least, we put it online and showed what was going on with this. And actually... city council elections from 2 years ago, we used parts
we
of
used
that,
that
study.
Yes, we did.
And said, hey, we didn't endorse any candidates from 2 years ago. All we did is said, hey, here it is. We want you to address these issues, and we raised questions and put it on the website. And we provided that not only to the city, but the county, the union, put it out to all the media outlets so they could see what was going on. And it while it was taken in, it didn't really generate a lot of excitement at the time. And now, like you said, it was prescient. It's probably... could have given them a little earlier warning about this is what you need to address in certain issues.
You know, again, I guess it happened that it came out at a time, 2005, when we were really almost at the peak of the real estate boom in this town, and the economy was great, and everybody was fat and happy, and nobody could really digest this gloom and doom scenario, and it was easy for the people at City Hall and elsewhere to just sort of say, well, you know, that's not the way we see it, and move on, right?
And I think that's where we come from as business people. We've been through these cycles in the insurance business. I'm an independent broker. I've been through about five cycles, and we've had real good years and real bad years. And so you plan for that rainy day, and sometimes it's a monsoon, and sometimes it's just a drizzle, but you have to plan for it.
I want to ask, we got to go to a quick break here, but when we come back, I want to ask you about the political nature of the Greater Reading Chamber. It is more political than some, more politically involved than some other chambers around the state, and why that is. So we'll be right back after this break.
Hi, this is Diane.
In our 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. In our 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. This portion of the show brought to you by Tobacco and Brew on Hilltop Drive. And now back to Mark Beecham filling in for Carl and Linda on Free Fire Radio.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it. We've got Terry on the line. Terry, you got a brief announcement, I understand.
I do. Tonight at Bonnie View Baptist Church, it's 6 o'clock on Bonnie View Road, the Reading Tea Party is going to present Roy Herger, and it's a good chance for people to come out and ask him questions. Also, we're going to have Maurice Johansson talking about what's new with the Veterans Cemetery, all the new things. And, then, of course, we'll be breaking into our groups after that. But want to invite the public to that. I think it'll be a good thing. I think that some of the things we need to start doing is asking our congressmen and our elected officials, you know, what are you doing? What's going on? And I'm going to be interested in hearing what he has to say about this discharge petition that he and Congressman King have introduced to the House.
Well, great. Thanks a lot for the announcement. Appreciate that.
You bet.
Okay. They can't possibly have the sort of turnout or fireworks that they had last week with Ken Murray and Patrick Jones at the meeting. That was quite something. And I'm going to actually have Aaron Ryan, the head of the Tea Party group, on tomorrow during the 8 o'clock hour to talk about that particular debate and her rather innovative debate format that I was concerned about at first, but it turned out actually very well, I think. We're back with Jeff Avery and Greg Balkovic of the Greater Reading Chamber of Commerce, and we've got about 4.5 minutes left. And I wanted to ask a question about the chamber itself. The Reading Chamber is, I would say, it's more political, more involved in local political issues than many other chambers perhaps around the state. And it is that way because of a particular reason. And Greg, you want to share what that is?
Yeah, we're one of the few chambers, I think, statewide that doesn't receive funding from a local government entity. All of our money comes from membership and fundraisers. We have a political action committee that develops its own funding activities, but they totally come under the jurisdiction of the Chamber of Commerce. And if they make a recommendation for something, it goes to our full board, and we don't always agree. In fact, this year as chair, I can't think of a time when we've had more open discussion about issues and candidates than we've had in the past, because people are very concerned about what's going on in our community, and they want to make sure that their perspective is taken into consideration.
That's a really tough balancing act, I would expect, because you've got a board sitting on top of an organization that has close to 1,000 or a little over 1,000 members, and they include everybody. I mean, from a paint shop, a body shop owner, to insurance guys, to nonprofits such as the McConnell Foundation, Turtle Bay, etc. So how do you calibrate the organization's political stance given its very diverse and large membership?
Well, I think it's the issues that dictate what we do. It's not the personality or the person, it's the issues. And we're very much concerned about the financial stability of our community and of the services that we're able to provide, and to continue to make this a place where business can thrive. And if those are the focus, that's the focus of the things that we get into when we talk about issues and candidates.
You mentioned a political action committee that the chamber has. How much money does that PAC have, and how much do you think you're apt to give during this current cycle to the candidates that you endorse?
Well, it's got about $30,000 in it now. Part of, I think, the study that we just did is coming out of that, that's going on right now. We've given Rick $3,000, and I think Patrick will get the same.
Okay. And you expect that the public employee unions that would support the slate of Speer, Sullivan, and Murray would be at least as generous or perhaps more generous in terms of campaign contributions?
Yeah, I would think so. We're also looking at the District 5 supervisors, right? So we followed up on that. That's been a real tough one for us. We've had several meetings on it, and we're going to interview the two candidates again.
Okay, talk a little bit about the two candidates and what's been the hang up there.
Well, there were three candidates to start with, we had a real diverse discussion on the PAC, and there was a recommendation made to the board not to endorse any of the candidates, and so we went with that. We had a further discussion about 10 days ago at the executive committee level, and we felt that it was important for us because of the times that we're in that we not sit that race out, that we need to make a decision and support a candidate.
Okay, in the last couple of seconds we've got here, we got about a minute it looks like, you guys support public safety, fire, and police. Your concern is what?
Our concern is that everything's sustainable, and that we're able to live up to those promises, that our community lives up to the promises for not only public safety but the employees they have. You know, I attended the IBEW city council meeting, and it broke my heart that there was an individual member there, IBEW member, that retired before that vote was because he couldn't afford to lose the benefits he'd already accrued in retirement. Well, I don't want that to happen to our public safety officials. I want them to be paid fairly. The market forces determine what it is needed to hire them and bring in the best of the best for our community.
Great. We've got to get out of here, and we'll be back tomorrow. I want to thank our two gentlemen from the Greater Chamber and Bob Belongi, my excellent producer.
You're listening to KCNR Shasta Redding.